ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Norman, we talk a lot about the gut microbiome. What do you do to nurture your gut bugs?
What do I do to nurture? Well, I talk to it regularly. I have a sort of communication.
There is a big, strong brain-gut interaction.
Well, There is this crosstalk. I'm really into crosstalk at the moment. So your muscles talk to your brain, your muscles talk to your gut and your microbiome, and your microbiome talks to your brain.
Yes.
So, I feel that it might get a bit lonely just talking to me, so I talk back to it. Now, so what I do think about it occasionally. So I try and have fresh yogurt once every day or two. I try and eat lots of vegetables and not too much red meat, and plenty of extra virgin olive oil. How does that, you've written books on this stuff, Priya, how does that go?
That sounds good to me. I just think of eating the rainbow. All the diverse fruit and veggies, whole grains, I try and limit artificial sweeteners, but we're learning so much more about the bugs in your gut, the impact it can have on your health, and this week we have a story on Indigenous infants. Their gut microbiome and the fact that it's far more diverse with different organisms in it, what does it all mean? And does it potentially mean an earlier, healthier start in life?
And it's probably a window into First Nations history in Australia. It's a really interesting study.
That's coming up on The Health Report. I'm Priya Alexander on Wurundjeri Land.
And I'm Norman Swan on Gadigal Land.
Also on the show, up to 30% of Australian adults could be living with fatty liver disease. And while prevention is important, what should you do if you already have the diagnosis?
There are early warning signs emerging when it comes to Australia's target of eliminating cervical cancer. And the answer to why there is an issue could be in our schools.
In the news, the GP and preventative health buff in me is devastated by the news that Vic Health, or people might know it as the Victorian Health Promotion Foundation. It's been around since 1987. They are a foundation who've done heaps of work in promoting good health and also taking on big industries like the tobacco industry to really bring about significant reform. But they're shutting their doors and they're being resorbed into the Department of Health in Victoria.
And just a little bit of history here. This was started, if I'm correct in my memory, by a Conservative government in Victoria and coincided with the introduction of a tobacco legislation,
yes,
which introduced a tobacco tax. This was the innovation, and it was a world-first innovation, where they used the income from the tobacco tax to fund prevention. And their early projects were associated with buying out unhealthy advertising. So you had alcohol advertising, you had tobacco advertising. This is before the bans on advertising. So the foundation bought that out and didn't require any government money. It was self-funding and did enormous work there. And then a little bit later, tobacco advertising was banned and so on. But the Treasury Department in Victoria hated the idea of Vic Health from the start because they hate hypothecation. So if they're taxing something, they hate the idea that that taxation goes to a specific project. And so there's a long history actually in Victoria of the Department of Health and indeed the government in general not really liking the Victorian Health Promotion Foundation because it's independent. And its independence allowed it to move around in the prevention space with much more flexibility than any government department is able to.
And I think the independence of Vic Health, and this is an organisation that I constantly use the resources of in the consulting room. They do wonderful work for early cancer screening, prevention space for skin cancer. They take on really commercially vested big food and beverage marketing, tobacco, gambling, alcohol. And it's because they're independent, Norman, that they're able to do that. And the real fear here is that now they're being absorbed into the Department of Health, where we know that there are lobbyists in all sorts of, at all levels of government. Will they be able to continue this good work?
But here's Rob Moody, Professor of Public Health at Melbourne School of Population and Global Health. He was Chief Executive of Vic Health from 1998 till 2007. And the other day he spoke to Fran Kelly on the Radio National Hour.
You cannot have the industries around the table when you're making policy, and we do. And that's why you need outside agencies like a Vic Health to be researching this, to be looking at what's going on, to be looking at where the political donations are going, to be looking at where the revolving door happens, to look at where these large corporations that have huge resources are influencing government policy in a very unhealthy way.
So let's hope that the Victorian Department of Health reconsider. The five previous chairs, including a previous federal health minister, Nicola Roxon, have written to the Victorian state government pleading for its survival.
And I would say this is the time to pour money into prevention. We talk on this show about mental health crisis and rates of chronic disease going up. This is the time when we should be pumping and pouring into prevention, not ripping the guts out of it as we are. So, yes, let's watch this space and hope that the pressure leads to some action.
While we don't want to keep on focusing on the United States, some of the things that happen there can leak here. And the new advisory committee on immunization practices, which is kind of the equivalent of our ATAGI, had a meeting last week. You might have seen the news on it. And in fact, Donald Trump has commented on it as well. One of the things that they've changed or want to change, the decision's got to be implemented, is to stop the birth dose of the hepatitis B vaccine. And this has enormous implications. The United States had thousands of cases of children with hepatitis B before this vaccine was introduced. Children who develop hepatitis B get it worse, it lasts longer, is more likely to cause cancer and liver failure. And you cannot rely on family history, ethnicity, anything really, to totally avoid the risk of acquiring hepatitis B at birth. And there's no harm to the vaccine if, in fact, you're not at risk of hepatitis B. We're giving vaccines all the time to children who may not be at particular risk, but we do that for prevention of the community as a whole. And they're talking about introducing it at the age of 12. I mean, it's just a disaster for America.
And it puts them in the minority because the WHO has 194 member states and 116 of them still recommend a universal birth dose of hepatitis B. But Norman, this is the same committee, I think it's worth reminding everybody, the same committee that RFK Jr. fired all 17 sitting members in June of this year in an unprecedented move. And now we've got members like Robert Malone, who has certainly spread misinformation and conspiracy theories when it comes to vaccinations. These are the people who are delivering this advice. And they're basically saying, look, we no longer need to give it universally to infants in the US, and they're going to only give it to the infants of mothers whose hepatitis B status is not known, or if they do have confirmed hepatitis B. And that might sound good on paper or to people listening, but you cannot rely on testing alone to prevent this serious chronic potential liver condition, because people's hepatitis B status can change. They might acquire it after they're tested. And not everyone is tested in pregnancy. There are plenty of patients who do not have antenatal testing. So these infants are at serious risk. You cannot just rely on testing serology or blood only.
So be glad that you're having babies in Australia.
Yes, but I think you did point out that this does have flow-on effects here at home. And I think watching this advisory panel meet was really quite disconcerting, because when they talked about safety, they plant seeds of doubt. And one of the things they say is there's never been a randomised controlled trial for the hepatitis B vaccine. And Norman, I know it's the US, but people then come into the consulting room and go, well, Priya, I just heard there's no randomised controlled trial for this vaccine you're about to give my child. Randomised controlled trials are amazing, but they're not the only way that we can gather scientific information and test efficacy of vaccines. And there are other epidemiological tools that we have to do that. And it's often unethical to do a randomised controlled trial with vaccines when you know that they're going to work. And you say to a group of infants, we're not going to give it to you, but we're only going to give it to these ones. You simply can't do it because it's unethical. So it's just these seeds of doubt, Norman, that just have far-reaching consequences and tend to have an impact here at home.
And you don't want your child growing up with hepatitis B. You don't want to condemn them to that, because it's condemned them to a fairly miserable life if it develops. And liver cancer rates are already rising rapidly in Australia, even with hepatitis B vaccination early in life, and that would just rocket even further if we didn't do it.
So it's unsettling times, but we're all together in this, I think, on the Health Report on ABC Radio National.